Every so often, I run into what's known as the preacher's dilemma, where it's just like, I want to preach on everything. There's 10,000 things in the readings this week that are just like, they're very relevant, very important. The second reading, the relationship between faith and works, which is one of the huge points of divergence for us and our Protestant brothers and sisters, where Martin Luther is saying, you are saved by faith alone, faith alone, faith alone. And then you have James coming along and saying, demonstrate your faith to me without works, and I will demonstrate my faith to you from my works. That's its own topic of conversation. You could spend a whole thing talking about that. So even though I want to drill down on that, really the gospel, as usual, is what caught my attention. And I think it's crucial and a really, really important message in today's gospel. So every single person that has ever lived is going to have to answer the question of today's gospel. Jesus asks one question that's kind of easy, a little bit at a distance. It's a safe kind of question. Hey, who do people say that I am? Like, that's extrinsic. It's fairly easy. And you can say, oh, well, my aunt says you're this, and my grandma says you're that. And, some people say you're Moses or John the Baptist or one of the prophets. That's kind of a safe external question to ask. But then he narrows it down. Okay, now I'm not asking about your grandma or your aunt and uncle. You. Who do you say that I am? That question every single person will have to answer. Who do you say that Christ is? And a lot of us can give maybe the theological answer of like, yeah, he's the second person of the Trinity. He's God in the flesh, yada, yada, yada. But is that really evidenced in our lives? That's the question I think the challenge of the gospel that presents to us today. Peter, of course, comes forward, you are the Christ. And he's not wrong, but he is wrong. I mean, he's wrong in his understanding. The Christ, the Old Testament understanding of the prediction of the Messiah, the Christ, the Redeemer. Israel had been conquered over and over and over again by the Babylonians and the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans, and they were currently occupied by the Romans, and so their understanding was the Christ is going to be the military leader. He's finally going to come in. He's going to kick the Romans' butts, kick them out of Israel, and we're going to be self-governed. And you're the guy to do it, Jesus. Well, he's right that he is the Christ, but he's wrong in how the Christ was going to go about redeeming Israel. And so we get Peter's response, and then what's Jesus's take from there? Immediately to say, he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer greatly, be rejected, and ultimately to be killed and rise after 3 days. And again, this didn't sit well with Peter. This was not the Messiah that he had in mind, and Jesus was not fitting into his box of how the Lord was supposed to work. And so he's, Lord, what are you doing? And we get that really kind of terrifying line from Jesus to Peter, get behind me, Satan. Okay, so that's kind of the outlay. This is the buildup, the foundation of where we're going, really with today's gospel, where the real, real challenge is. So that's the backdrop that we're getting to the end of the gospel of today. Then he summoned the crowds, and he said to them, whoever wishes to come after me, there are three conditions. If you wish to come after me, you must deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Dang it. Those aren't fun. Those aren't fun things to do. But I think it's incredibly important to really kind of drill down on that a little bit. And I don't think it's an accident. It's like the Lord is very deliberate in everything he does. It's not circumstantial or accidental that the first condition that he lays out for being his follower, for being his disciple, the first condition is to deny yourself. Self-denial. Again, not super fun. Not something that I think Americans in general are really, really good at, but to deny ourselves. So it's interesting. I don't know if you've ever heard of the marshmallow test, but if you haven't, do yourself a favor after Mass today. Go Google the marshmallow test, and there's a YouTube video of this marshmallow test. It is hysterical. You are welcome in advance. It's so funny. But the marshmallow test, it's more or less, basically, they set these little kids, 2, 3, 4 years old, whatever, they set them down at a table, and they put a marshmallow on a plate in front of them. And they say, okay, I'm going to leave you alone with this marshmallow, just you and this marshmallow. I'm going to leave you alone with this marshmallow. You can eat it now if you want, or if you wait a few minutes, when I come back, I'll give you 2 marshmallows, okay? And then it's the video of these kids and their internal existential crisis as they're trying to debate whether or not they want to eat that marshmallow right now. And you could just see, it is hysterical watching these kids, like, some of them will grab it, like, you know, they're filming this, recording, the kids don't know they're being recorded, but they'll grab the marshmallow and they'll smell it. And some of them will, like, nibble a little bit and just put it on the plate and, like, physically turn their head away so they don't have to look at this temptation anymore. Because it's like, you know, you just see these kids dying inside. And then there's a couple of them that are just like, just right away. Just like, no hesitation, no struggle. Just like, yeah, I want the marshmallow. So it's funny and it's cute, but it's really a fascinating kind of psychological experiment that they conducted back in like the 60s, and they followed these kids for decades from the time they were children all the way through in various degrees, and they measured long-term success and long-term happiness. And what they found is the number one predictor of these children's long-term success and overall happiness into adulthood. The number one predictor was not their socioeconomic status as a child. It was not their whatever the color of their skin or their background or their ethnicity. By far. And geographically, it didn't even matter geographically what part of the country they grew up in. The number one predictor of long-term success and long-term happiness was their ability to deny themselves pleasure. They call it delayed gratification. By far, the greatest predictor of success and happiness. If you wish to be my disciple, you must deny yourself. And I think that we live in a society where we're incredibly blessed. And we don't even know the basic standard of where we are, like the minimum standard of where we are in our society is greater than probably any other society in the history of the planet. And so for us, like, if we deny ourselves, maybe it's like, oh, maybe I'll park in the back of the parking lot rather than 2 feet away from the door and walk the extra 50 steps. I'm a martyr. You know, like, the first world problems that we deal with, maybe I won't have 2 slices of a pie for dessert. Maybe I'll just stick with 1. You know, like, these are our martyrdoms. These are the ways that we deny ourselves. And I really think that there's something we're called to something greater. The self-denial of a Christian. Temperance is the virtue of denying ourselves what is over and above, what is actually good for us. To instead of asking the question, what do I want? You know, shopping based on our wants. What about needs? Do I really need that? Just because we can do something doesn't mean that we should do it. Just because we can buy the bigger car with the bigger wheels and the shinier chrome or whatever those things are doesn't mean that we necessarily should. Maybe denying ourselves some of those things is actually the virtuous way of growing in discipleship. You think about it, even just in terms of, you know, our human sexuality. That's an area where our culture that we live in says, don't deny yourself anything. If it feels good, if you feel like doing it, go for it. Knock yourself out. And even within our Christian and Catholic families, like this idea of denying yourself in terms of our human sexuality, that's not really fun. I'm just going to go ahead and engage in contraception because I cannot deny myself something. That is the precondition to discipleship. It's not necessarily fun, but it is necessary. Deny yourself, take up your cross. Oh man, come on, Jesus, you're killing me here. Take up a cross? Who wants to do that? I'm not much of a writer, but if I was ever to write a story, I would write a story about a journey that these people set out on, an allegory, so to speak, and they're trying to cross this desert, right? And on the far side of the desert, once you get across the desert, when you get to the far side, then there's a big mountain, and you have to climb the mountain. And once you get up the mountain at the top, then that's where heaven is. It'll be kind of an allegory of the spiritual life, right? And so this idea of crossing the desert, and each person starts off and they're carrying a cross of some sort. And you know, the first guy, he's going along and he's carrying this cross, and it's 10 feet long, big, long, heavy cross. And it's heavy, and it's dragging and it's slowing him down. And so as he's going along, he sees another cross that's like 5 feet long laying on the side of the road. And he's like, ah, I like that one a lot better. So he swaps it out and he carries his cross. And as he's going along, and he makes it across the desert. And then when he gets to the mountains, the path that he's going on, there's a gap, a big ravine that is 9 feet wide. And a 10-foot cross would span that. And he would be able to use his cross to gap the ravine. But his 5-foot cross isn't big enough. But he didn't know that. And in the process of exchanging it, he actually shortchanged himself. Or the person who has the big heavy cross and they're carrying it and they're moving along and they're like, man, look at me go. I've got this. And they're like, you know, the people are around them are carrying their crosses too. And they're like, hey, you know what? I'm so awesome. Let me take your cross and stack it on top of mine. I got this, right? And so as they're going along and they kind of get separated, and as they go along, the person with the big stack of crosses runs out of gas and doesn't even cross the desert, because they overestimated their ability. And then the person that he took the crosses from and is carrying their crosses, they get there and they get across to the mountains, but again, they find that they haven't been carrying their cross and they don't have the muscle, the stamina to climb the mountain that they would have had they been carrying their cross. We spend a lot of time and energy trying to avoid our crosses, complaining about our crosses, wishing that it was somebody else's cross. Man, nobody else has to struggle with this medical issue. Look at my sister-in-law. Look at my cousins. They have the perfect marriage, and my marriage is terrible. We're not happy. Look at these other people, and their kids are normal and they're healthy, and they don't have these issues that I'm trying to deal with and try to walk through with my kids. If only I had somebody else's kids or somebody else's wife or somebody else's something else, then my life would be happy. And in denying that, we are denying our means of salvation, brothers and sisters. It's not a mistake. It's not a coincidence. It's not by accident that we are given crosses. They're actually for our benefit, even if in the moment we don't recognize that or realize that. We can't see it. But again, the journey of a Christian is to take up their cross and then follow the Lord. Following him is actually the third of those three conditions. And it's difficult as well, because we want to follow ourselves half the time. And so this gospel, I think, is challenging. It really, really is a hard one if you actually sit down and wrestle with this, it's a hard one that, am I denying myself? Am I carrying my cross? Or am I wishing there's something else? And am I actually following the Lord? So I'd like to give you, to wrap up here, I'd like to give you a homework assignment. And this is something that could be, I mean, really, actually concretely practical thing that you could do. So in terms of denying yourself, here's what I would like you to do. At some point today, before you go to bed, grab a piece of paper and a pencil and list right out, what are 10 ways that I am currently denying myself? What are 10 things that I'm doing that I am denying myself? If you got kids, especially little babies, and you're not sleeping at night, guess what? That's denying yourself. You know, if you want to go golf on the weekends and your kids have sports practices or, you know, a game and you're like, well, I got to go do that. Yes, that is denying yourself and that counts. So write that down. What are 10 ways that you are currently denying yourself? And then write 10 ways that you are not and that you need to grow. What are 10 things, 10 areas of your life where you're just indulging and engaging whatever that desire, whatever that passion, whatever the Greek philosophers would call it the appetites. The appetite that you just, whenever it comes up, yep, I'm engaging in that thing, whatever it is. And I'm not denying myself. 10 things on that list and 10 things on this list. Because it's important to recognize where we have victories, but it's also important to recognize where we need to be challenged. And if you can't come up with a list of 10 things on either side, ask your spouse. I'm sure they can help you. Ask your kids. I'm sure they could help you. Or kids, you can ask your mom and dad. I guarantee mom and dad can help you. What are those areas where we need to begin practicing that self-denial? Just one very small but very concrete, very practical way that we can begin this process of following our Lord more deeply, more closely, that we can be his disciples.